The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Welcome into another edition of Clown Takes. Obviously a very interesting week for the Red Sox. A lot of turmoil around the team, including, you know, some suspended players, a tough loss on Wednesday night that nobody wants to talk about. But obviously there's been a lot of stuff flying around Twitter, and we are always keeping an eye on it. And we've got a particular target in mind this week. And most of you probably know who we're going after and why. But we will get into that in a little bit. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. Joining me on this episode of Clown Takes from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing great here. Excited to clown our new big Twitter personality today. So it's going to be a fun one.
Yeah. I think this one will definitely get pretty interesting. Alongside us for Clown Takes from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
I am doing splendid. The Clown Takes format can be tough some weeks. You know, some weeks we just don't have the right criteria to do the format. We've got very juicy criteria this week. So happy to get into it. You can find me at Cushman MLB podcast at Bastards_Boston. We're on Instagram, and find our Substack blog. That is our in-print blog. It's much different from all the others. I know everyone would say that, but it's formatted a lot different. So just take my word for it and check it out if you are interested and our imprint stuff.
Absolutely. Well, this week, the Bastards found themselves on the other side of Red Sox Twitter. It was like a united front for the first time in a while, which doesn't usually happen with us. But obviously, we all know that Jaron Duran was suspended earlier this week for two games for his homophobic slur that he blurted out during a game over the weekend. So he got the two-game suspension, and obviously there was a lot of, you know, people sort of reporting about that, saying, you know, well, whether it was the right thing, wrong thing, two games enough, blah, 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 right? But then another tweet came down, and this happened Monday night. So the Red Sox suspended him Monday afternoon around 3 o'clock. The suspension officially dropped. They announced that they suspended him for two games, not MLB, which is an important distinction too, because the Red Sox worked with MLB, but they said, we, as a team, we will discipline him. We're suspending him for two games. Kind of benefited the Red Sox because they didn't have to lose a roster spot. They're able to call someone up to take his spot, you know, and that was part of the minutia with that. So Monday afternoon, the Red Sox officially suspend Duran for two games. A couple hours later, one of the more prominent Red Sox personalities on Twitter, Gabrielle Starr, tweets out at around 6 p.m., per source, Boston Mayor Michelle Wu has requested a meeting with the Red Sox regarding the Jaron Duran incident. Now, this tweet was up for a while. It was probably up for at least an hour or two. Ton of engagement. Obviously, a lot of people leaped onto it because Gabrielle, you know, works for the Herald. So a lot of people view her as, you know, a reporter. She must have gotten it from a source. And okay, wow, that's huge. The mayor wants to meet with the Red Sox over this. That's a big deal. You know, especially for a team that's in the middle of a wild card race, a team that's, you know, by the way, has a Netflix documentary being filmed about them throughout the whole season. So everyone kind of jumped on it like, wow, that's huge news. And in a since deleted tweet, she did follow up just after that, saying that the mayor's office denied that report. And then subsequently, Gabrielle deleted not only that, but the original tweet, and never spoke on it again. Turns out a lot of people fact-checked, double-checked with the mayor's office, kind of, you know, went back and forth. And basically the mayor's office came out and said, yeah, that's a complete lie. It's complete fabrication. The mayor never said that she wanted to meet with the Red Sox. That report was made up. There's no truth to it at all. So that happened. And there's been no response from Gabrielle Starr since then. She has not tweeted out a mea culpa. She has not, you know, she hasn't even said like, oh, no, my bad. I got it wrong. My bad. Nothing like that. Just radio silence from her end. So obviously a lot of people are rightfully, I think, calling her out, questioning her journalistic integrity because, you know, you tweet out that the mayor of Boston wants to meet with the team over what was frankly a very sensitive incident, and it turns out to be a complete lie, and you don't make up for that at all. You don't send out a, you know, an apology tweet. You don't, you know, you don't correct yourself. Very strange behavior from someone who deems himself, you know, a reporter. So, Terry, I'll start with you on this one. I mean, you and I have, you know, we've been following Gabrielle for a while. A lot of people follow her on Red Sox Twitter. She's one of the more prominent personalities on there. What was your reaction to learning that the whole thing was fabricated and just kind of seeing now how there's been no response from her since then?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy to have a big controversy on the Red Sox, you know, on the actual roster, and then that spills into a major media controversy. Like, nobody had that on their bingo card. And I think the Duran controversy in and of itself still casts, you know, a larger cloud than what took place with Gabby on social media. And Gabby is, I don't know if she's really an activist, but she founded a all-female platform, I guess, and is known for that. And she's got strong ties to the Jewish community. And for some reason or another, she's just been very polarizing, at least on social media. And we've never really interacted with her. You know, we don't really have a relationship with her at all, you know, and, you know, generally, I mean, I, she's not someone that, you know, she's never really been on our radar for anything. And, so I will say this though, she was at FanSided, I believe, when we were the FanSided podcast. That's how she went from her own blog to FanSided, and then from FanSided to the Boston Herald. So in a way, we were kind of teammates for a little while anyway. You know, she was more on the .com side. We were more on the, you know, the audio side, I guess. But having said that, I mean, she kind of, you know, you say for once we weren't the bad guys, and it was her. And it was just very irresponsible. And the mayor's office, it was not a signed email, but it was a general account from Mayor Wu's, you know, press people. And this is exactly what the email read in response to the, you know, the botched lead or whatever, or the bad source. That email from the mayor's office said, quote, "Thanks for reaching out about this to confirm. We don't think the reporter had a real source because the information was completely made up." So that's Michelle Wu's office completely throwing Gabby under the bus. So it's hard for us to really, we can't really get into Gabby's head and know what her motivations were about this. You know, we can only speculate, but not a good look for her. A major foul in the beat writing community. I mean, I think the only thing worse than something like that would probably be plagiarism or something. It's something you don't want to get involved in. And us as a podcast, I don't seek out stuff from sources. And even if somebody came to me and said, hi, this is my name, this is my connection to the team, this is what I'm hearing, I would never take that information and run with it. Okay, that's not who we are. We react to, you know, we react to news developments from credible sources. And granted, we do speculate on some stuff on the podcast, but we preface it that we're speculating. You know, we're just trying to connect the dots and make sense of the observations that we're making. And that's as far as we go with that. So it was a big time foul. And like Jason said, she simply deleted the tweets. And the tweet was out there for a long time. We were talking about this on the pre-show. It was viewed nearly 700,000 times and had 2,500 likes, almost 600 quote tweets. Like that's a major viral tweet within a sports team, you know, within a sports market. When you follow a sports team, that's extremely niche. Kansas City Royals fans aren't following our media circles. Los Angeles Dodgers fans, for the most part, are not following us on social media. So to get 700,000 views within your own media market, that's massive. That would be viral, I would say. So, you know, everybody loves a good shit show, and that's exactly what it was. And the only thing that's been, it was more controversial, and we discussed this on the pre-show, was the Craig T thing. And I would say that's way and above what this was, but this was still the next closest thing. And the night Craig T went down, all of Red Sox social media banded together. Everybody who hated each other was suddenly on the same team and went after Teed. And it was somewhat similar in this situation, just a major violation of journalistic integrity. So not a good look.
Nick, what are your thoughts?
So my initial reaction to the tweet by Gabby was, this has to be fake, or this is a fake account. I just couldn't believe it, because I, off the top of my head, I was just like, there's no way the mayor knows who Jarren Duran even is. It kind of sounds like to me somebody texted her and was just messing with her. Hey, the mayor wants to meet with Jarren Duran. And she just kind of ran with it and tweeted it out and didn't confirm with anybody that it was real. And it was just kind of the thing that it's so stupid. It's, who believes that? Like, I think everybody was laughing at her, like, this is not happening. Saw so many quote tweets are like, yeah, right, what is she talking about? And I've seen Gabby, you know, get in fights with people before over stupid things, or, you know, this is not the first time she's had some sort of controversy, never this big, but she's had some issues in the past.
Yeah, now that the dust has settled, my only thought is, like, she had a source and they lied to her. Or she had a source and they went with shaky information, gave it to her, and she just ran with it, because maybe this source has given her stuff in the past that has hit. You know, maybe this source is someone who she has been able to break news with, and, you know, it's worked. And maybe this one time that source had just, you know, a little bit, a hint of something, and just ran with it and ran right to Gabby and said, hey, I got a scoop for you, you know, from the mayor's office. And instead of, you know, double checking, which any respectful journalist would do, any respectful journalist would contact the mayor's office first to confirm it before tweeting it out. But she didn't do that. She just ran with the tweet, and, you know, it was one of those situations where she wanted to be first, not right. And unfortunately, it happens a lot, especially in sports journalism. There's like this race to break news, you know, and it's gets a lot of people in trouble, especially like around free agency, trade deadline stuff. Like everyone wants to be the first to report it. And sometimes being first doesn't mean that you're correct. And we've seen a lot of national reporters get in trouble for stuff like that. So unfortunately, she fell into that trap. And it's, you know, it's one thing if you do it, but then you come out and say, look, you know, my bad. You know, I thought I had a source. It was wrong. I shouldn't have tweeted out right away. I should have double checked. That's my fault, whatever. Right. I think a lot of people would just sort of let it go at that point. But to delete the tweets and then to just carry on like you usually do, just posting the lineup, you know, tweeting out play by play and everything and like just acting like nothing happened, that's more annoying because that's like you're not even taking accountability for, like Terry said, like a massive violation of journalistic integrity. Like that's no small thing, like especially for the situation that we're talking about. The Jaron Duran incident was a really tough thing for the Red Sox to have to go through. It's a very sensitive subject for a lot of people. And we saw it. I mean, people are ripping each other apart on Red Sox Twitter, whether or not, you know, he should be suspended. And, you know, it was a very touchy subject. So for her to report on that with false information that she didn't verify is really irresponsible in a lot of ways. And when you do something like that, you know, it's people are a lot more forgiving if you just sort of put your hand up and say, yeah, that was wrong. You know, I screwed up. You know, even if she says, yeah, I had a source and they, you know, they lied to me or they gave me bad information. Okay, that's fine too. But you still took that bad information and ran with it. So you still need to be held accountable too. Like if she just does that, this whole thing, like no one's talking about it, but it's like days later and people are still going after her about it. And I kind of don't blame them because it's like, you act like you're above everyone because you write for the Herald and you've got a blue check mark and you've got all these followers. And it's like, you act like you're impervious to screwing up like that. Whereas, you know, speaking for us, like on this podcast, if we give a bad take about something and we tweet it out, we get crucified on that app. I mean, just for saying something like, you know, I don't know, like last year when I said Tristan Casas should be sent down to Worcester when he's having a bad first half, I was getting dragged for that all season long. Every time he had a 3-for-4 game with a homer in the second half and he was crushing it, I'd have people tweeting at me like, oh, how do you feel about that? No, still needs to be sent down. And I've come on the podcast and I've gone on Twitter and say, yep, I was wrong. I was wrong. I had that one wrong. I'm not an expert. I just come on here and give opinions. That's it, you know? And I know it's different in Gabby's case because she's a reporter. It's not an opinion thing, but I mean, that's taking accountability really makes all the difference. I mean, it just because otherwise people on Twitter aren't going to leave you alone. There's a guy who I'm not kidding you tweets at me, I think almost every day. And I'm going to pull up his handle because I hate to give him the attention, but
it's a weird name, right?
Yeah. It's this guy, Bren, and his Twitter handle is like Rickle or something. And anytime there's news about prospects, he mentions me in the tweet and he's like, oh, you know, color of the iris, he must hate this news. Because in the past I've said, you know, I've called people prospect humpers and I've said, I'm not all that jazzed up about Roman Anthony. And, you know, I don't think the big three is all going to work out. Like, so this guy legit tweets at me every day. That's just what Twitter is. And it's like, I don't care. Cause I'm like, whatever, dude's a nobody. I don't care. But that's kind of what Gabby has to realize. It's like when you make a mistake like that on Twitter, it's just until you just take accountability for it, it's not going away. And she just loses so much credibility. It's like someone made the comparison and unfortunately it's kind of becoming true. She's like, she's just Boston Strong 34, but she's actually got a picture in her, you know, for her avatar. They're the same account. They do the same thing. They tweet out the lineups. They tweet out the pitching matchups. They do live play-by-play, and that's it. There's no real reporting going on between either account. And now that she's made this massive mistake, that's kind of the bucket she falls into. It's like you've got a blue check mark and you just tweet out generic stuff. So I don't know. It was a real bad misstep by her, and I'm just surprised that she allowed herself to fall into it. Because I do think she's smart. I think she's, you know, she can be good at what she does. But it was just such a bad misstep. It's like, just own it at this point. Just own it. Say you screwed up and we'll all move on. But if you're going to delete the tweet, act like it didn't happen, and act like you're above everyone, then it's not going to go away.
So self-awareness is important if you're going to be creating content. And it didn't help that it was literally the most popular player on the Red Sox that was on the other side of the controversy. Hard to beat that guy in a popularity contest. And here's an example of this. I think it was 2023. The Red Sox got a pitcher off the scrap heap. This was, one of the bloom years. And his name was Matt Dermody. And after they announced his acquisition, a tweet came up. And I'm going to read the tweet. And it is a little bit offensive. But I have to read it to put this all into context. And we do not endorse anything he said in this tweet. But it was during Pride Month, which causes a lot of people to, you know, be insanely stupid, including him. He says, homosexuals will not inherit the kingdom of God. They will go to hell. And I'll just stop it there. Blah, 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 blah. And immediately caused a massive controversy. And there's a huge difference between Matt Dermody and Jaron Duran. Okay. And Duran immediately took accountability. I don't remember how Dermody handled it, but Dermody was a nobody and instantly got buried. And what he said was obviously way worse than Duran. So it's open season on a guy like that. With Jaron Duran, who had already accepted he had already issued his apology, which seems sincere. He had accepted his suspension, which was a couple of games. And I don't know if we knew that there would be a suspension. I mean, there was not a huge precedent from this. I guess Kevin Pillar got suspended for something similar, but I didn't even remember that. That's how insignificant it seemed. And so it's insanely stupid for someone like Gabby to like take a stand against Duran. Like, you can't win that. You cannot win that battle. And I'm just throwing numbers out here. This isn't backed by anything, but I would say probably 50% of the fan base either forgave Jaron Duran immediately or didn't care one bit one way or the other. That's about 50% of the fan base, I would guess. Another 30% of the fan base, I'm willing to bet, was disappointed but accepted the apology. And that's where I was, you know, it was disappointing, but he apologized and moved on. And I would say about 20% of the fan base probably won't forgive him, but that's a large portion of the fan base that is going to put this behind them. And so it was already dealt with. And then Gabby added her own layer of controversy to it. It's just dumb, you know? So.
Well, and now it's like that tweet's become a meme here in Boston. Like, I just saw a tweet from another account that's like, per sources, Mayor Michelle Wu wants to meet with the Patriots about their offensive line situation. Like, it's, you know, in a way, that's kind of her punishment, is that now, like, that tweet is going to be the evergreen. Just anything goes wrong in Boston sports, it's going to be, per sources, Mayor Michelle Wu wants to meet with so-and-so, which just makes it even more dumb. It's like that just really shows like how negligent tweeting out something like that was. And I agree with you. Like, I think most of the fan base at this point have already put the Duran incident behind them and they don't care. He's still a super likable guy. Like, you know, you'll still get a few, you know, like Shaughnessy criticizing him for wearing the F'em t-shirt, you know, when he was doing the apology. Like, whatever. It Shaughnessy's always looking for a negative slant, so you know it's that that is what it is. But yeah, like he's still super popular. It was a bad screw up, but he got suspended. He apologized, and you know he said he's going to keep working at it. Cool, moving on. You know, like why do we have to, you know, pour gasoline on the fire by, you know, bringing the mayor into it? It just, I don't know. It was a very weird, just a very weird angle to take. You know, if it really was just all fabricated and she didn't have much to go off, it was like, why even go down that route? It just didn't make a ton of sense.
So in Duran's case, I think what Terry said about 20% of the population of Red Sox fans probably won't forgive him. I personally think it's less than that. I think it's probably closer to 10 or 5% of fans.
You're probably right.
Yeah. As long as he comes back and he continues to hit and continues to play like an all-star, the fans are going to forgive him. You know, there might be the 1, 2% of fans that are like, I'm never going to even look at him again. And that's their deal. I don't care what they do. I've forgiven him, you know, like as long as he goes out there and plays. And I think he will, as long as he's not too hard on himself. That's what I'm kind of worried about. If this whole thing is going to backfire in his face and he's like, I have to come back out here and try to hit 400 now and try to get everybody to forgive me. You know, I think as long as he just plays hard and doesn't do it again, if it happens again, then a lot of people are going to turn on him. But as long as he shuts up, does what he's supposed to do and performs, I think he's going to be okay.
And in the finale of the Rangers series, when he was able to come back, ironically, that's the one game we lose. Isn't that insane? You finally get him back and that's the one you lose. He was 1 for 5 with 2 strikeouts. And I think he led off an inning and got on base. He ripped a single to right field. He also had a really good play off the monster, a good relay to hold the runner to just a single. So he looked good, I thought. You know, he just seemed pretty focused, so that was really good. But in terms of accountability, though, I also want to point out that, and not just accountability, but transparency, Duran has been open about his struggles in the past, whether it's performance or mental health, you know, and I think that kind of did him some favors here, you know, when people were, you know, as it turned out, were very forgiving towards him. And Gabby is not accountable at all. So you've got two different people on two different sides of the controversy that, you know, one does it the right way and the other one, Gabby, does not. So it just makes it an even worse look, in my opinion.
Even if you don't believe Jaron Duran's apology is sincere, at least he went out there and he immediately gave one, and it sounded sincere to me, but if you don't believe it is, whatever. Gabby did not own up to it at all. All she had to do was tweet out, sorry guys, misinformation, you know, I should have checked, and she wouldn't be getting all the hate she would be right now. She'd still be getting hate, no doubt, but I mean, no one's ever going to believe about the mayor wanting to meet with a baseball player again about a word, but she just needs to own up to it, and it's too late now. She could even made more fun of if she does it now, but you know, she hasn't owned up to anything.
Yeah, and you make a good point. Like she could issue a fake apology and that would still go a long way, you know, and she's not even smart enough to do that.
I mean, I said it on the pre-show. She could have made up an imaginary source and buried her imaginary source. Just said, yeah, I got bad info. I was lied to. I won't tell you who my source was because I'm a reporter. I never give up my source. But yeah, I got lied to. And, you know, it's a shame that happened. I'm sorry it happened, but whatever. That would have pretty much ended it. I mean, sure, you'd have people speculating and people probably would have been like, yeah, we don't believe you still, whatever. But like, it pretty much would have been done with. To just not say anything. And when you guys are the comparisons between, you know, her owning up to her mistake and Duran owning up to his, it's a lesson in humility. Duran got humbled by his own mistake and he, you know, he got suspended for it. And, you know, people are going to look at him differently now. Even the fans that I think the ones that forgive him are kind of looking at him like, dude, are you okay? Because, like, this is not the first time that you've, like, gotten into it with fans. because that was my thought. I was like, you know, this guy runs really hot. Like that Colorado series when they had that mini scuffle on the field. I mean, Duran came storming out of the dugout and it looked like he wanted to fight the entire Rockies team. And, you know, he wasn't even the one directly involved. It was Reese McGuire, but Duran was like the first one out of the dugout. He had to be restrained by the Red Sox coaches on the way back to the dugout. And if you go back and watch the video on his way into the dugout, he's like barking at Rockies fans in the front row. And it's like, these are Rockies fans. Like, we're not in New York. We're not back in Boston. Like, what could they possibly be saying that's so bad? And, you know, this last time, it's like the fan says, oh, you need a tennis racket. And that's the reaction that you get out of them. That's not a good sign. So I do think that, again, it's a lesson in humility. Duran is going to be looked at differently because of this, whether fans forgive him or not. I mean, just today, Tony Mazz went on the radio and said they should trade him this offseason. And he literally said, he's like, I, you know, was always kind of thinking it, but after this, now I'm for sure they need to trade him. He's like, because you've got a logjam anyway. And we talk about it all the time on this show. Like, you know, Terry, you mentioned it. There's going to be a painful trade at some point. And Mazz was saying it should be Duran because it's not the first time it's happened. It's probably not going to be the last. If he can't control his emotions, good or bad, you know, that's the guy that's going to get dealt. So again, I don't think it's going to hurt his career, but it might change the course of it because now the Red Sox brass are looking at him like, I don't know, dude, like, yeah, you're an inspiring story. A lot of fans look up to you because of how open you were about your mental health and everything. But if every little chirp is going to get to you to the point where, you know, the well runs over and you blow up and say something stupid, then we can't have that. We can't have that headache, you know, every couple of months. You know, it reminds me of like when BJ Upton first came up with the Rays, super talented player, five tool kind of guy, looked like he had a bright future. And then he just kept getting into fights, kept barking at fans, like, and eventually became too much of a headache for any team to want to take on. Look at Alex Verdugo right now in New York. I mean, we're happy to be rid of him, especially looking at what he's doing there. He's already becoming a headache there. So it's just that kind of thing. It doesn't bury your career, but it can definitely change it. And I think Duran at least recognizes that and owned up to it. So again, it's just he had the humility to say, yeah, no, I screwed up and I need to own it and be accountable for it. Unlike, you know, what happened with Gabby.
So in terms of trading Duran, I was probably the most open to it of anybody early in the season because I didn't think there was any chance we were going to be buyers at the deadline. And in my opinion, we weren't buyers at the deadline based on what we actually did. But having seen him break out even more than he did last year, I just don't think Roman Anthony is going to have this ceiling. And I don't think Abreu will either. And Abreu had a pretty good series, you know, against the Rangers as well. I think there's a chance that if they trade him, this will blow up as bad, if not worse, than the Mookie Betts trade did. I really believe that. And I think the fans, like I was saying, the 50%, that forgave him immediately or didn't care, I think they're even bigger Duran fans now. I mean, there was a fake source, and I'm not going to lie, I walked right into it, said that his jerseys were like an all-time record for MLB sales, and that came from a parody account, and there's nothing out there that corroborates it, so it's probably not true, but as you do search for them, they are hard to come by right now, Duran jerseys. So I just feel like those people love Jaren Duran more. And I just think it would be very tough to do. The optics are just so hard right now.
Nick, would you consider trading Jaren Duran this offseason?
Yes. And I think he's a very, very good player, and my mind did not change because of what happened last week, you know. My reasoning is we're two left-handed. We have another left-handed outfielder who it looks like we're going to guarantee a spot to and give all the chances in the world to. I think they're all sold on Willy Abreu. I think they want him as an everyday outfielder. And Jarren Duran is one leg injury away from being a totally different player. And speed-first guys don't typically age well. So once you hit 30, 31 years old, he's probably going to take a sharp decline. His speed's going to fall off. His defense is going to fall off. He really is he's not a power hitter. So his triples are going to turn back into doubles. His singles are going to turn back into – or his doubles are going to turn back into singles. I think he's just going to have a further or a harder fall off than a guy like Willy Abreu, who is a better pure hitter, in my opinion, at least at this age.
Yeah, I think I've always sort of looked at it as like, I want to see how Duran does over the course of the rest of this season, and I want to compare it to Abreu and sort of decide between those two. Because like I said, I have no idea what Roman Anthony is, and nobody does. People who claim that he's, you know, going to be this great thing, you have no idea either. He just got to AAA, so we don't know if he's the next great Red Sox outfielder. You know, he's still really young. Duran's age does work against him. It just does. And, you know, I really like the guy. My opinion of him didn't change that much, you know, after this incident. I always kind of thought he was a little bit of a loose cannon. I didn't realize it was that bad. But, you know, I still think he's a really good player. And I think overall he's still a really good guy. You know, that didn't change. But his age does work against him. 28 years old. As Nick said, he's a speed-first guy. That's his best asset, is his speed. You know, it doesn't last forever. It doesn't. You know, not everyone can be Ricky Henderson. Not everyone can be Kenny Lofton. So there is probably going to be a drop-off. Whether it happens at age 30 or not until age 33, nobody knows. But I'm not willing to trade away Willy Abreu, who I think has proven that, you know, he can be a really good big leaguer at this level and is still young. He's 24. So he still has growing to do as well. I'm not willing to just dump him off because Jarren Duran had 1.5 good seasons. I think that would be a mistake. So I'm not saying they should actively look to trade him. He's under team control for like ever. So there's no impetus to trade him. But if Seattle comes knocking and says, hey, we'll give you George Kirby for Jarren Duran and a prospect, that's going to be hard to pass up because Seattle needs offense and you need pitching. And there's other situations like that. Miami needs offense. You need pitching. Like, you know, if they get a great offer like that and Duran is like the centerpiece and they only ask for, you know, not bottom feeder minor leaguers, but, you know, anyone outside the top 10 and, you know, Duran's the centerpiece of the package, they're going to have to really consider that. You know, they just will. So I'm not looking to actively trade him, but if someone calls, answer the phone and see what you're getting. And if it's a frontline starter, then yeah, I'm willing to listen for sure.
He will lose some speed. Like, he's not going to be stealing 20 to 30 bags a year, 4 years from now. Like, I agree with that, but he has hit 14 home runs on the year. And I think it's possible his ceiling could be higher. I mean, it could be 20, 25 home runs. And then at that point, I mean, if you're elite at the plate, you're elite at the plate. And he's leading the American League right now in doubles. And he's leading all of Major League Baseball in triples. That will come down as well. The triples for sure will. But I just think, I mean, you look at all the leadoff guys we had. I mean, Mookie Betts is obviously the best we ever had. Jacoby Ellsbury, probably number two. And I'm saying this century, in the last 25 years. I think Duran is third. I really do. And the one thing that's also hurting Jarren Duran right now is he doesn't have that October narrative. He doesn't have those legendary October moments. And I think once he has those, I mean, he's a very tough player to replace. I don't know how you do that. And he's going to be going for any team to give up a haul for him. It's going to be a win now team. you know, a team that's going to be competing basically right away. So it would have to be a prospect laden package, and that's fine. But I just, if you really want to win, if we're going to be aggressive this winter, and I don't know why we would be, we should be, but I don't know why we would be. Duran would be a big part of making it next year. I just, it's hard. It's hard for me right now, but you are going to have to trade someone. So go ahead. Yeah, Nick.
I agree. Nick, do you have any other thoughts?
Like you said, I would not give him up for a prospect focused package. It just makes no sense at this point, unless it's like three really good pitching prospects. Maybe you would look at it, you know, you might think about it to add some pitching into the system. But at this point, the Red Sox are moving towards win now, and if they have to move an outfielder, and if you can get I doubt you can get George Kirby. I don't think they're going to move on from Kirby, but maybe one of the other guys from Seattle, or, you know, the Marlins don't really have anyone left anymore. They announced today that Sandy Alcantara is not going to be moved, but the Marlins always lie. So who knows what they say every time they say, they told Mark Burley he wasn't going to be traded and he was gone like 3 weeks later. You know, so who knows with them. They got rid of Edward Cabrera. You know, he's not worth Jaron Duran. I'm not doing it for him. So it's got to be, I don't know if there's a pitcher out there that would make sense for both teams, you know. A team for Duran, like the Royals, who I would not really want to trade him to, and they don't have any pitchers that they're going to trade back to us. So I don't know if it's going to make sense, but you got to make that decision probably this offseason. It has to happen.
And in terms of the confrontations and stuff, Alex Verdugo was clashing with Alex Cora. Like, he was a legitimate clubhouse cancer. With Duran, his controversies are happening more on the field in front of us, you know, not with his own teammates or with any personnel within the organization. So I'm not real worried about him being a cancer, really, behind the scenes, like Alex Verdugo was.
No, I agree. I don't think that's who he is. I think he's actually very well liked in that clubhouse, and I think his teammates have a lot of respect for him. There were, like, some of the quotes that came out after the whole thing was, like, you know, Duran saying that a lot of people look at him as a leader. And he even said, he's like, I don't see myself as a leader, but guys in that clubhouse do. And I think that's probably actually very accurate. I think there's a lot of guys in that clubhouse, especially the younger ones, you know, like your Valdez's, your Rafaela's, who kind of look up to him because he did have to battle his way to the major leagues. He didn't have a smooth path like, you know, Rafaela did. Rafaela, you know, accelerated through the system, got a cup of coffee at the end of the season, and then got an 8-year extension. So I'm sure he looks at a guy like Duran and goes, wow, like, he's already 5 years older than me, and he just, you know, got in here and just made a big leap and has to continue to prove himself every day. And again, Duran leads by example. He plays his ass off every single game. And up until the suspension, he had an Ironman streak going. So he posts every day, plays his ass off, and I think he is well-liked in that room. So I agree. I don't think that he would be – like, they wouldn't trade him because he was a clubhouse problem, right? So I agree with that. It's just, does it get to a point where you get a really good offer, and because of his age and because of your outfield pipeline, it becomes more prudent to trade him? And, you know, that's when they're going to have to make that decision. So I agree with Nick. I think that, like, this offseason, the winter meetings, Bresel's going to get peppered with questions about Jaron Duran and his availability and what they're looking for in return. And he's going to have to navigate that very carefully. So that will be another big test for him early on in his career as the GM here.
Yeah, I think he's going to get peppered with questions about all three of the outfielders, whether it's Anthony, Duran, or Abreu. And I'm interested to see who he picks, because Roman Anthony is not his draft pick. You know, he drafted another outfielder this summer, so he might like that guy better. Who knows? Like, I'm interested to see who he picks, and he has to pick one, or he would have to move Rafael to infield full-time, which I doubt that's going to happen.
No, not with Story and Meyer coming up. Here's another thing too, which I think is impressive. Durant against righties, who naturally he would hit better against, he's hitting 302 with a 353 on base. Against lefties, he's still pretty damn good. He's hitting 268 with a 343 on base. The only difference is the power numbers. Only two home runs against lefties. Only, let's see, five doubles versus 31 doubles against righties. But still, like, elite at the plate. And I think those numbers could be higher. I think they can get better as we go. So, again, hard guy to replace. And do we want to clown Tom Caron before we go?
Oh, yeah. Give me a minute on this, guys. So, jeez. So anyone watching this week, obviously it was the Jimmy Fund week on Nesson. Pretty important week for them. Tuesday's game, it was early on in the broadcast. I don't know if it was the second or third inning, but they sent Tom Caron out in the stands with a high visibility vest on, and he had the donation sign. And he's walking around with a microphone, and he's, like, barking at people. He's like, you want to be on TV? You give a donation. You can be on TV. And he went up to this one woman. He's like, come on, give a donation. How much you want to give? How much you got? And she was like, oh, I'll give, like, $5. Like, $5? That's not enough to get on TV. No, how about 10? You have 10. You can give $10. And, like, she tried to play it off as, like, well, we donated a lot yesterday. Like, I only have $5 on me. He's like, oh, well, you're not getting on TV. $5 is enough. Who wants to be on TV? And he's like marching through the stands. He goes up to this other guy. He's like, sir, you have like three Trulies in front of your feet. That's at least $30 right there. You must have more cash. You want to be on TV? Come on, you've got something. And the guy's looking at him like, no, I don't have anything. Like, he probably paid with a credit card. He's a millennial. Like, we don't carry cash. So it's like, and he's still going through. He eventually goes up to a guy and hustles him for $100. I don't know how he finished that. He's like, ah, hundo, that's what we're looking for. Hundo, there we go. Who else wants to be on TV? And I'm just sitting there like, this is so cringy and so, like, not what charity is supposed to look like. Like, Tom Caron, you know, marching through the stands, barking in your face, like, trying to hustle you for cash. It's just... it was such a weird moment, and it's just another example of how downhill that Nesson broadcast has gone. It is just putrid now.
So one thing that could help the Red Sox here, literally, I'm not even being facetious, is start winning more. Be competitive halfway through August so that you have more people on TV that will text that five-digit number to get those numbers up. And I haven't looked at the data yet, but that pathetic display by Tom Caron makes me wonder if the numbers are going to be a lot lower this year. And does that reflect a smaller audience? We see the empty stands every game, you know, and we just had the Astros in. That's a marquee matchup last weekend. There were tons of empty seats. And so I don't know. It wasn't good, but if you start winning more, more eyes are going to be on the team, more money comes in. And so I think it's all just a direct consequence of where we're at and how non-competitive we've been the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, Nesson ratings continue to go down every single year, and it's not just Dave O'Brien. It's not just the commentary team. It's the team on the field. You know, you keep missing the playoffs year after year. That's bound to happen, no matter who's in the booth. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a part of it, too.
Yeah. Definitely hate Nesson. You know, I think there was a point this summer that I tweeted like 15 times in a row, and it was all about Nesson and how bad they are. I didn't say anything else. I'm like, Nesson stinks. Nesson sucks. Fix your broadcast at Nesson. It's terrible. The whole production's bad. It's kind of embarrassing when you go watch the Mets, you go watch the Padres or the Dodgers, and how beautiful watching their games are and how great it sounds, and the camera work is even better, you know. I'd rather watch an Apple TV or Peacock at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. I actually get pumped when they're on national TV or even the Apple TV Plus games. Like you said, like I have that service, so like I'm good with that. The quality and camera work is so much better. So yeah, it's just another thing to be annoyed about if this team does eventually miss the playoffs. It's like, you know, if we get eliminated with a week to go in September, we gotta, you know, tune in for those broadcasts. And you know, you're Dave O'Brien and Lou and Tom Karen blow smoke up our rear ends about, you know, oh, well, the future is bright. Like, yeah, okay, 6 years, another, you know, another playoff miss, but whatever. So we'll see how that goes. But anyway, we will wrap things up for this edition of Clown Takes. Thanks for tuning in. Keep an eye out for Monday morning. The weekend crew will have you guys to recap the Baltimore Orioles series. So everyone enjoy that. Have a good weekend, and we will talk to you later. Take care.